The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
We're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Hey guys, final hour of the Killer Bees for the week. Jeremy's been out all week, comes back on Monday. Looking forward to getting him back. But in the meantime, we kept the band back together as BMAC and his part-time assistant, B-Rod, because of the fact that Jeremy always comments on how much time that Brian gets off. Have all been a part of the show.
Not as much as he does.
Fantastic. That's a good point. But we still have a pair of tickets to give away for the Hunter's Extravaganza. We found out we had an extra pair in the prize closet. So again, let's just do this. We'll take the next caller that identifies who I'm co-hosting with this week. The 2024 Hunter's Extravaganza, two tickets to you, 713-780-3776. Call now, get a pair, and go next week. That would be great. Right?
Yeah, that would be awesome, man. Right. Especially you could come out, if you come out on Friday, you could see the Killer G's and the Killer B's live and in a living color.
So with that being said, we were talking about the Texans quite a bit and live and in living color. Nick Caserio and Travis talked about it. You know, the fact that, yeah, a lot of people will point to the fact that the Texans swung and missed on their first two head coaches under Nick Caserio, but they obviously got the right one now. And now more so than ever, it seems like there was scrutiny on Caserio. There was the coaching situation. There were a lot of things where people were pointing fingers. Was he going to get the draft pick right when they won the last game of the year against the Colts? Why didn't they tell everybody to pull all the starters and not play them so that they could lose? And yet here we are, and now everybody is singing the praises of one Nick Caserio. Colin Cowherd had a lot of praise for Nick Caserio, and here's a guy that's been pretty critical of everybody, including ownership and the entire franchise, and he somehow turned it into blaming Bill Belichick for letting him leave New England.
Because that franchise was a joke in the league. And then Nick Caserio, who was the director of personnel in New England, took the job. Three and a half years ago, and has crushed the draft and crushed free agency. In three drafts, Houston now is a top five roster from a bottom three roster. Joke to playoff team in Houston. They just added a star edge, a star running back, and a star wide receiver in free agency. He has made almost no mistakes, Nick Caserio. He may have missed on an offensive lineman in three drafts. That's it. Yet New England's last six drafts, of which Caserio was in the building for a few of those, several of those, probably last seven drafts, have all been putrid for New England. So either Nick Caserio suddenly got brilliant when he got on a plane and flew to Houston, or three or four or five or six of those drafts, because he was in New England for years. And the drafts kept getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse and worse when Caserio was there.
So, what are your thoughts on that? Because I think that
I think he's saying Bill Belichick overstepped his bounds and sucks at drafting.
Well, and basically because Belichick was such a dictator that not uncommon to owners doing this, but Bill Belichick's the kind of guy that says, yeah, you guys can do all the due diligence and all the work, but at the end of the day, at a certain point, I'm just going to make the decisions that I want to make, regardless of what you think.
Right.
And doesn't that also, as a side note, say if you believe that Belichick screwed up by letting Caserio get out, that you have to give credit to Jack Easterby for being on that plane to driving it to fly it to England to get the guy out?
Look, this was a team. This is a general manager that the Texans tried to get before they even got him, and obviously got their hands slapped when there was some allegations of tampering before they eventually ended up getting him in 2021. But as Cowherd lays out there, and he goes on, the clip's pretty long, so we couldn't play all of it.
Right.
But as he goes on to talk about, like, I mean, Bill Belichick, and he points to a couple other, like, older coaches where it seems like these older, hard-nosed, hard-ass type guys that are coaches seem to want to take more and more control and not listen to the people around them. And it's either that Nick Caserio, as Cowherd pointed out, became a genius in the time it took to take a flight from New England to Houston, or Bill Belichick just wasn't listening to him in New England. Obviously, we know what the answer is. I mean, that's pretty obvious because also, as Cowherd points out, which is a stark difference between the conversation or to the conversation people were having about Caserio up to the start of last season, where some people are talking about, let's start completely over. Let's not only fire Lovie Smith. Let's start completely over. Let's hire a new GM too. And when you look at Caserio's time, other than the miss on Kenyon Green, which still has a very tiny, tiny percent, you know, chance.
I think it's more than tiny.
Okay, well, less than 50%, but it still has a chance to pay off. I mean, there's possible we could be talking about basically no misses that matter. But really, right now, it's only the one miss that matters with Kenyon Green trading down and taking him instead of taking the safety that the Ravens ended up taking, Justin Hamilton. So, Kenyon or
Kyle Hamilton.
Yeah, Kyle Hamilton, sorry. Nick Caserio, whether it be with the draft, with Derek Stingley, obviously Damian Pierce as a fourth-round pick was certainly great as his rookie year. Obviously hit it with Stroud.
Will Anderson.
Trade up for Will Anderson. The moves this offseason with Danico Autry and Daniil Hunter and Stephon Diggs. We think he so far hit on the pick of Juice Scruggs. The trade for Shaq Mason. There's been
If Laster pans out with all the corners passed over,
there was a lot of questions of Kamari Laster. Like, oh, he doesn't have the long speed. He doesn't have the speed to stay with guys on the outside. And look, it's team reports and training camp, so grain of salt, sure. But all the reports so far is Lassiter is a dog who's going to wind up being a great pick in the Texans' second outside corner. So, yeah, I think, Bill, I'm sure there's some from Robert Kraft or whoever's left there in New England, I'm sure there's some hand-wringing. I was like, man, we had the guy in our building, but we let Bill Belichick draft guys like N'Keal Harry in the first round, wide receiver who was an absolute bust, and just completely run this roster into the ground while Nick Caserio, as Cowherd points
Jones.
Out.
Think about Mac Jones. Think about the fact that everybody was giving Belichick all this credit. Hey, he didn't even have to trade up to get a guy like Mac Jones. And then the guy you got like Mac Jones turned out to be not so good of a guy like Mac Jones.
Yeah, rookie year, Mac Jones looked pretty decent, but then he fell apart really quickly after that. So, yeah, I mean, Bill Belichick will obviously go down, if not the greatest coach of all time, you know, what, top two at worst? I think he's number one, too. I'm just inviting some room for debate. But despite all that, like you, as Cowherd points out, you look at his last, like, 7 years or so of drafts, and it's littered with miss after miss after miss after miss. And I'm sure Patriots fans are, you know, obviously looking with hungry eyes at Nick Caserio, thinking what could have been.
Who sang Hungry Eyes?
Was that Duran?
No, I don't think so. I think it was one dude, but it wasn't Patrick Swayze.
No, it could have been Patrick Swayze. He's not a singer, right?
No, but She's Like the Wind is the one his one-hit wonder. No, but to your point on Caserio,
I'm sure the text line will tell us.
Here's the funny thing about all this with Caserio, though. How quickly, when you get the quarterback right, people forget about everything that happened prior. Because to your point about when Nick was on the hot seat, it was, and if he screws this up and he doesn't get this quarterback right after the two coaches that he got wrong, and the fact that, you know, it seemed like it was an Easterby-led organization, and that because Easterby got him the job, he kept Jack around, and Jack kept getting more powerful and more powerful. And then you look at the miss on Green, and you think about everybody that was calling for his head. And I said, look, you got to give him one more year. And if one more year we're still having this conversation, it's legit, and he probably shouldn't be the GM for the rest of his contract. Instead, because he got CJ right, everything has changed. And then on top of it, to get D'Amico right, when you get coach and quarterback and you get them so
everything
close to one another,
into place.
And everybody forgets about everything previous.
Yeah, because, look, let's be honest. Even though I think maybe his quote-unquote failures for the first two seasons were overstated. I mean, Jalen Petrie was a great pick in the third round. Obviously, Nico Collins, amazing pick in the third round. Davis Mills is not a starting caliber cornerback or quarterback, but for a third-round depth piece, that's a fine pick. That was coming in a year where they didn't have a first or second-round pick. So I thought he had
Pierce for 1 year.
Yeah, Damian Pierce, obviously. So I thought Derek Stingley's rookie year was up and down, but I still thought even before the drafting of C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson, he was still having more hits than misses in the draft. So I thought the criticism, while I understood it, was a little bit oversaid. But like with anything in the NFL, it always comes down to quarterback. You're right. If C.J. Stroud hadn't worked out, basically if he'd been Bryce Young, Nick Caseri would no longer be the GM of this team. He would have been run out. But C.J. Stroud hit, and now we talk about all the other hits that he's had, and he's a genius.
Well, because I think the other thing that people forget about is the fact that this was a guy that actually put himself on the headsets during games.
Yeah,
he did some things.
It's not a great look.
But I think that if you look at it from the positive side of things, he probably knew that he made the wrong call on a head coach as much as he had the plan in his head that, look, I've got so much work to do to get this team just back to common ground, digging out of the hole that O'Brien left for me, that it really doesn't matter who coaches this team, and I'd rather have a guy that's kind of like a placeholder than getting a guy that I think is going to be my long-term head coach and make them endure the losses and the aggravation of everything they went through. But he got so cute with Cully that it kind of just set everything back even more so than at least gaining ground while you were doing the fighting Rex Burkheads and the short-term veteran players that just kind of treaded water for you. But once he got everything right, people forgot about even a general manager on the headsets during games. And now he's being, you know, lauded as one of the guys that, if not the best general manager in this city, I don't know who is, but, you know, people talking about he might be the best general manager in the history of the Texans.
I would say yes and yes. And I think it's almost without debate at this point. I mean, now, obviously, if Jeff Luhnow or James Click was still there, then there would be a debate. But, yeah, right now in the city, there's no question. I mean, Nick Caserio is the best GM in town. And I would definitely co-sign, you know, greatest GM in Texans history. But, I mean, getting back to kind of, the, you know, 2021, 2022, with what you mentioned about him being on the headset with Coley and kind of – because people were upset, like, hey, you miss on two head coaches in a row. David Coley's one and done. Lovie Smith is one and done. But as you mentioned, like, what is the – they knew they were going through a two-year transition period where, to borrow the term that you and Jeremy always used to say, you embrace the
suck. That's my term.
Yeah. Oh, okay, my bad.
I created it. That is my legendary creation.
My fault. The Joel trademarked embrace the suck.
T-shirts were coming.
It's been a couple years. We need them. But I think they knew that. They didn't really have a choice. Like, well, now – twofold with D'Amico Ryans, and they probably didn't have the idea that D'Amico Ryans was going to be the guy in 2021. That was obviously a little too far out. But let's use the guy they hired, D'Amico Ryans. D'Amico Ryans, I believe, was in his first year as San Francisco's defensive coordinator. He wasn't ready for the job yet.
He had just taken over from Saleh.
Right. He wasn't ready for the job yet. So you couldn't have brought him into that situation. And even if you had decided to jump the gun and elevate him way before he was ready to, you would have put him into a situation where he had no chance to win for the first 2 years. I think he would have won more games than Coley and Lovie Smith, but we're talking, you know, five wins instead of three. And now you're putting a losing record on D'Amico Ryans that he's going to be judged on that really wouldn't be fair to him because he's not dealing with a full deck of cards. He's dealing with a roster that's intended to suck to acquire the draft picks needed to rebuild the roster. And so now he's starting, you know, behind the eight ball where he's being judged on a crappy roster with a losing record for two seasons. And then now he's going into year three when he finally can win. He's on the hot seat, like right when he's finally having a chance to win. So I think it was wise to basically hire – it should have been one transition coach that if you're blaming the Texans, we could have just done Coley or Lovie Smith and not done both of them. But I get and I support the idea of having the transition coach because they weren't going to win for 2 years, and there's no reason to hire the guy that you want here long term when you know those first couple years that he has no chances to succeed.
Well, you know, the name that we forget it quickly about Nick Caseri's past is Josh McCown.
Yeah, and that was obviously a Jack Easterby thing, too. Yeah,
Easterby was driving it, but that was part of it, too, that if Nick that really was truly in control,
that would have been a disaster.
And let that happen, that would have been bad. So Nick has definitely dug himself out of more than the hole that Bill O'Brien left. Now Nick Caserio standing atop the mountaintop in terms of general managers in the city of Houston, Texas. So that's a big deal. All right, we're going to get to a break as we continue to roll on in the final hour of the show. Look, there's some controversies and some discussions and some competitions going on across the league right now in terms of the week one starters for several teams in the NFL. We're going to let you call your shot right now. We'll call ours. We're going to try and figure out who we think is going to be the starting quarterback in multiple markets with multiple teams this year. Anybody seen the Pittsburgh situation lately? It's crazy. Okay, we'll talk about that and a whole lot more coming up on the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
BMAC and I taking you through the final show of the week as Jeremy's been on vacation back on Monday and the band will be reunited and it will feel so. No. check out the text
feel
line.
Good.
Yeah. Look, I mean, sitting in the B chair on a consistent basis, when you flip back over to the A chair, it's an adjustment. And y'all, and to me, it's like, you know me, I'm hard on myself that even if I screw up like the bumper out or say the wrong show, those are things that tick me off. But it's been fun, and obviously it'll be good to get Jeremy back on Monday. Some text messages from Now the Killer Bees. For years now, the Killer Bees and I agreed. Y'all were saying that Nick needed more time. When Nick took over, there was absolutely no talent other than Grenard and Tunsil. OB put the Texans in a crater hole, and y'all were saying this job maybe took 5-year minimum to dig them out of that hole. It's true, but at the same time, you didn't expect, for all the positives that we're talking about now, you didn't expect that the hires of the two coaches and some of the moves that he made early were going to be moves that maybe added to the setbacks instead of the progression to get out of the hole.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think overall, if we're kind of recapping the Nick Caserio conversation, I think Nick Caserio, I mean, he started the first draft without a first or second round pick. He's in a situation where basically they've decided for 2 years they're going to suck. They don't have their quarterback on hand. So I think he was being graded, even though I thought he did pretty well, actually, in the first 2 years. Again, he drafted Nico Collins. He drafted Jalen Petrie, Damian Pierce. Obviously, Derek Stingley worked out really well. Obviously, John Metchie, for lots of reasons, hasn't worked out. So Christian Harris was a great pick for him. So he had a lot of hits in those first couple drafts. But I think he was just dealing with a situation where they weren't ready to win, so people were in it. I mean, not that they're completely unjustified. They can only grade what has happened. They can only grade him on what he's done so far. But they're in a situation where they weren't ready to win, so they're grading him kind of on an incomplete job so far. Like the rebuild wasn't done, and I get that patience is not something we have for NFL teams, but it was a 3-year process, and we were grading them and trying to rush to judgment after 1 year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. From the text line, Eric Carmen saying hungry eyes, by the way. So you were right. The text line would be the accurate people saying that. A lot of people saying, and multiple text messages as well, that Nick gets credit for CJ, but had they not won the Indianapolis game, we don't know if they would have taken CJ. It's what I've said in a lot of cases with Rafael Stone and his high draft picks. When there's three guys at the top of the draft, or in this case, there were two guys at the quarterback list, maybe some people like Jeremy thought Levis might be in the conversation, but it was really either going to be one or the other.
It was a two-person, yeah.
It's who, if you have the second or the of the two picks, or the third in the case of the Rockets, you actually get less criticism because you end up taking who was left for you instead of who you might have already taken. So do you factor that in as well?
I get the point because to a degree, it was a two-person draft at the top, and so they were going to be stuck with whatever was second. If C.J. Stroud had gone one to the Panthers, which was what Vegas thought, you know, initially at the start of the draft process, then they would have taken Bryce Young. Obviously, Panthers went with Bryce Young, so they took C.J. Stroud. It was a two-person deal. But what we don't know, and why I think this sort of semi-criticism is unfair, is we don't know who the Texans viewed as the best quarterback in the draft. If they viewed C.J. Stroud as the best quarterback of the draft, the guy they wanted and not Bryce Young, then it's not fair to say, well, the Panthers made the pick for you. Well, okay, the Panthers got it wrong, but if they viewed C.J. Stroud as the guy and would have taken him at one or obviously taken him at two if it fell to him, then you can't criticize Nick Caserio because he got the evaluation right, and you don't know which quarterback they had evaluated as number one.
Well, yeah, you probably get a pretty solid feeling by the end of the process that you know which way Carolina's leading, but you also still still have the ability to make a trade if you felt like, hey, I want to get above Carolina.
That's a sign too, right? Yeah. If they were so convinced that it was Bryce Young and Bryce Young only, you think you would have heard more chatter about whether they're really – because they had the ammo to do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had the 12th pick in the draft that year. They obviously had the extra future picks from the remnants of the Deshaun Watson trade with Cleveland. So if they really thought – if you're criticizing Nick Caserio because, well, the Panthers made the pick for him, and also insinuating that the Texans liked Bryce Young more and CJ just fell into the lap, then I think we'd have heard more chatter that the Texans are desperately trying to use those extra assets from the Watson trade to move up one spot, because they certainly could have. If they'd offered 12 and another pick, they would have been able to get the Panthers to trade down one spot, and that didn't happen.
Oh, no doubt about it. That's why I think there's arguments to be made on both sides, but the big takeaway is always going to be, when you do finally get the quarterback right, and on top of it, though it took you your third chance, you got the coach right, that everything else is forgotten way quicker than otherwise. Because he would live in infamy, much like Bill O'Brien does with the D-Hop trade and the Tunsil trade and some of the moves that he made. If he had missed on one, if not both, of the guys that he finally got right, he might never have outlived. He'd have been looked at as a negative.
If he'd missed on Stroud, he wouldn't be here right now.
That's probably true.
If Stroud had the rookie season,
or D'Amico, he misses on either one of those guys,
sure,
I don't think he's still here.
I would agree with that. But mostly, like, if Stroud had the season that Bryce Young did, Nick Caserio would not be the Texans general manager right now.
No.
Period. End of sentence. I mean, despite what we think about D'Amico Ryans, they would have still, praised D'Amico Ryans, said, okay, you're great. Now let's get you another general manager who we think can evaluate talent better. Because if C.J. Stroud, if you flip-flop the numbers, he had that season that Bryce Young had, I think they would be trying to rebuild with D'Amico Ryans, but getting a different talent evaluator. Because even though he'd had some hits with Petrie and Nico Collins and some of those guys, although Nico Collins probably wouldn't have looked like he did because he would have had a quarterback who would have played not as well. I think they would try to rebuild with a different talent evaluator.
But I think flip side, Brian, the same thing could be said about Stroud. If Stroud showed glimpses that he was good, but D'Amico was doing Lovey and or more so Cully type things, he probably would be fired as well, because they'd say, okay, now we got a quarterback, we got to get the right coach and look for a more offensive minded coach.
I don't know if I agree with that, because I don't look. I think obviously Nick Caserio had a hand in the hiring, but I don't think he was the lead in that process. I do think he was the lead in the process of, okay, C.J. Stroud's our quarterback. They're trusting and delegating the responsibility of evaluating that talent to Nick Caserio.
You don't think he was the lead
manager
in D'Amico?
No, I think that was Callan Hanna. I'm not saying Callan Hanna says it has to be D'Amico. We don't care what your opinion is, Nick Caserio. Hire D'Amico no matter what. But what I am saying is, this rebrand and rebirth of the Houston Texans, the new era of the Houston Texans, obviously the new uniforms are coming down the pipe. They're trying to make us all forget about the Jack Easterby era, trying to get us to forget about the Bill O'Brien era, the sucking, the Deshaun Watson. I shouldn't have said those two things so close together. But I think ownership with Cal and Hanna had identified D'Amico as a former Texan, someone who the entire fan base wanted, and that was the decision. And Nick Caserio would have had a really hard time trying to persuade them away from that pick.
I think that I would legit say, if there were two or three candidates on the table that were all kind of evenly spread out,
there's Sean Payton.
But which was what I'm saying. So I said, I'll go with you if you think, hey, Hanna and Cal stepped in and said, of the three guys you've identified as finalists, there's no doubt in our mind for our franchise,
right,
we want D'Amico.
I think that's what happened.
Yeah, I can buy into that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because otherwise I can't buy into Cal McNair analyzing any of the coaches and going, that guy ordered banana pudding and a steak. He's my head coach.
Well,
like,
we talk about Chaz McCormick. We know he likes banana pudding.
I mean, I'm saying I don't trust Cal on his own to make any kind of decision.
I think Cal would base the decision on who to hire on who's most fun to play video games with.
Honestly, that's a possibility.
Flips, who flips a burger best? Those are the things that Cal super – which, hey, I identify with. I also like burgers and I also like video games.
Yeah, well, okay.
Which this show is really eating into my time to play NCAA football 25, as I know Austin will agree with.
We've got Austin and Sean.
We've got Dell too. We've got dynasties to build, Joel.
The
Right now, I got recruits going out on visits to, like, Coastal Carolina. I don't know what's going on with those recruits. I got to get back to them, make sure they know they need to come and play for the Rice Owls.
Here's the sickest thing about all you guys that play this game is the people, because Pena.
I think he's about to judge us also.
No, because Pena called in this morning with Dell as well and Sean on this and said he was really ticked off because he decided to be a two-star under-recruited player that is working his way up to play at a Power 5 school. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, you don't even get to play the game because you got to fight so hard to go to class and do it. If you have the amount of time to fight through hours and hours and you're not even playing an actual game on the field type game, what the hell's wrong with you people?
I'll say two things about that. One, I'm not playing that mode. That's called the Road to Glory. That's where you play.
That's called the no hobby mode.
That is the single hobby if you're doing that. Road to Glory can be fun, but yeah, it's a little too much time. And I will say though, if your player hasn't built up to the level where they're starting yet, then it's also fast forwarding through that game. So you're not spending all this time watching games that you're not even playing in. It just sims through it. So it's not as much time invested as you would think, but I do prefer Dynasty over Road to Glory.
I prefer none of the above.
Austin, you a Dynasty or a Road to Glory guy? I think you're a Dynasty guy, right?
Yeah, more Dynasty.
Yeah, see, we're cool. We're cool. We're not seeking all that time into that you think we are.
So you're a Dynasty guy. So Victoria Principal and all those.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Wasn't that the show? I don't know. Old school show. You guys wouldn't remember. It's way before your time. All right. Speaking of time, 30 minutes to go in the show. We've got a half hour left. So that means we've got a couple more things to get to. We promised you we were going to get into some of this in terms of the starters at quarterback for multiple teams and who you think and what you would bet on in terms of who you think is going to be the starting quarterback week one. We'll get to some of that. And then, of course, because it's the last segment of the show, that means we'll also have our car wreck of the day coming up. If you got nominations for car wreck, 713-780-3776, call that number, text that number, hit us on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube. We'll get you the nominations as we get to the final segment of the show. Final 30 minutes comes up next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, 92.5 FM.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Branham out, BMAC in. Final less than 30 minutes of the show as we wrap up a strong week with the fill-ins. As Jeremy comes back on Monday, Lamont tweets us, does it worry y'all at most of the Texans' wins were one-score wins? No, you know what, Lamont? It doesn't worry me as much as the fact that if you want to put some worry, the games that they were supposed to win, they either didn't or those games were too close, like the Jets, like the Falcons, like Carolina.
Yeah.
Those are three games that come to mind right off the top of my head where I go, those are games you should have won and won convincingly and you didn't, as opposed to the way you actually fought back and beat Tampa Bay and it was all CJ and his arm and his leadership and the things he was able to do late and throughout that game. So I don't think that bothers me as much as the losses, who they came to and how they looked. But sure. I think that the offseason you have to factor in as well. No matter what they did a year ago, what they did in the offseason was maybe more impactful because of the guys they brought in and how they solidified almost every position they needed.
Yeah, and that's the thing. What you hit on there at the end is why I'm not worried about one-score games from last year. And I don't give them as much flack for losing the Jets game because I get it. Zach Wilson torched you. That's hard to look at. But you're on the road. It's raining. It was one of the best defenses CJ faced. I can understand that loss, although it was definitely frustrating. The ones that I would kill them for, the Falcons and the Panthers loss. But back to the question. I'm not worried about one-score games from last year because they're not running out the same team from last year, as you pointed out there. I mean, they added Daniil Hunter. They added Denico Autry. They added Azeez Hashir at linebacker. They added Stephon Diggs. You get Tank Dell back, who wasn't there for the last five, six games. Obviously, there's the natural progression and maturation of C.J. Stroud and D'Amico Ryans and the play caller Bobby Slowick in year two. So I'm not really worried about one-score games from last year because it's not the same team as last year.
Right. I think the good thing about whether you won the one-score games or not was you knew what we were talking about earlier. You knew you had your quarterback. You knew you had your head coach. And you knew you had enough talent that you were going in the right direction. then because of the one-score games that you won and the way that you made not only made it to the playoffs, you won the big game you had to win at the end of the year to get in, then you won a playoff game. It gave you everything you needed to know about the fact that this team was taking the step to the next level, and they weren't far away from being a team that could compete for much more. And then what they did in the offseason says, yeah, okay, sometimes, yeah, there's a little luck involved. Sometimes it's a little fluke.
Of course.
But at the end of the day, you got to win the games no matter what, how much you win by, and they found a way to win the amount of games they needed to.
Yeah, there's obviously some lucky wins in there. Like if Tyler Boyd catches the pass in Cincinnati, you lose that game to the Bengals.
Yep.
Obviously, I'm sure everyone remembers how the Week 18 game against the Colts ended with that with the running back dropping the pass that would have resulted in a first down and a likely loss for the Houston Texans. So there were plenty of situations where they were probably lucky to win. But look, I think when you're trying to judge this team in one-score games, I mean, for a rookie quarterback and a rookie coach, even though maybe some of it was luck, but luck, as you said, it's a part of sports. It happens in every sport. It happens for every team. I think it says something about a team with a rookie head coach, a rookie play caller, a rookie quarterback being able to succeed in those one-score games, because that's a tough situation for guys without a lot of experience to come into. And despite the lack of inexperience, they came in and they succeeded in most of those cases, obviously not against Carolina, not against Atlanta.
But that's why I also bring up those three tough losses, because I think depending on what side of the argument you are on, you do have some legitimate ammunition to use.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Carolina and Atlanta losses, like I said, I'm a little dismissive of the concern over the Jets loss, but there's no doubt that the Carolina loss and the Atlanta loss for the people on that side of the argument are things that's hard for me to refute.
The Atlanta loss to me was you made Desmond Ridder look like a starting quarterback
in the
NFL.
And the same thing that happened in the Jets game. You made Zach Wilson, who had been a bum basically his entire career.
CJ was hurt, and he got hurt in that as well.
But to the point, I mean, Zach Wilson thrown for 300 yards has nothing to do with CJ getting
the
concussed. Right, exactly. Yeah, so it was disappointing for sure.
All right, speaking of Zach Wilson, speaking of quarterbacks, there's some odds that have come out for several teams and their starting quarterback for week one of the regular season. You get to call your shot, BMAC, right now, and I will give you my opinion as well. But who will be the starting quarterback for the Denver Broncos week one? Bo Nix, who's a minus 300. Jared Stidham, who's a plus 400. Zach Wilson, who's a plus 550.
I'm going with the chalk here, the favorite. I'm going with Bo Nix. Look, I mean, I can't imagine Sean Payton, who is not on a short leash. He's Sean Payton. The Broncos paid him just obscene money to be there. But I can't see him hitching his future to a guy like Zach Wilson. He drafted Bo Nix, I believe, 12th overall for a reason.
He was handpicked by Sean Payton.
I believe he was the last of the quarterbacks in the first round, so I guess it could be in some ways the guy that fell to him. I can't imagine Sean Payton hitching his wagon to Zach Wilson. I could see Jarrett Stidham being the week one starter and letting Bo Nix ease into it. That wouldn't shock me, but if I had to place money on it, I would say Bo Nix.
Bo Nix would have to look so bad.
Not ready.
If
he's bad in preseason, then Jarrett Stidham will probably be your week one starter. I can't see it being Zach Wilson, but I would bet on Bo Nix.
Giants starting quarterback week one. I feel the same way as I did about that. You're going chalk on Denver. Daniel Jones, Drew Locke, Tommy DeVito. To me, it's a no-brainer. I heard Locke's look good, but you're paying Daniel Jones $40 million a year. Unless he's hurt, he's your starter week one, in my opinion.
I mean, yeah, for anyone who's seen the offseason Hard Knocks with the Giants, I mean, all the conversations they've had have been, you know, if we get the Daniel Jones the right guys at receiver, or if we get him the right guys on the offensive line, which arguably they did not, then we're going to see a different level for Daniel Jones. So, obviously they've committed to him with the money, as you mentioned as well. So I think Daniel Jones is going to get every chance to be the starter, so much so that, you know, it's not really his job to win. It's more, Drew Locke would have to look like the next time.
They said he had looked good early.
Yeah,
but
he
same
can't
time,
just look good. He's going
to
have to look
Daniel
like
Jones too much money to sit him down.
Right. Yeah. That's my point. I mean, if Drew Locke's going to win the job, he's going to have to look Joe Montana. He can't just have a good camp, a good preseason. He's going to look like someone who's their franchise quarterback, and I can't see a world where that's the case for Drew Locke, so it's going to be Daniel Jones as the starter.
All right, some more interesting ones. Patriots starting quarterback week one, Jacoby Brissett, Drake May.
I'm leaning Brissett. The word out of training camp, from what we've heard from the Patriots, from Gerard Mayo, is they like what Brissett has been. Brissett, I think he's been underrated, honestly, in his NFL career. Obviously, he's been rushed. He was rushed into action a couple times with the Colts. I thought he actually looked pretty competent at times with Washington and with Cleveland. In every situation, those teams would then, you know, get whoever they had a quarterback back or draft a quarterback of their future and move on from him. But I thought Jacoby Brissett has looked competent. Patriots have about 5 million wide receiver threes, but they, you know, so it's not no wide receiver ones, but the overall room isn't bad. I think they give Drake May a little bit of time to sit back and develop and learn and make Jacoby Brissett the week one starter.
I look at Drake May and I say this is a situation where he's the quarterback of the future, but the future doesn't start now.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that he needs polish. He needs to get accustomed to the league maybe and takes him a little bit more time to get his feet wet. I think Brissett's the guy. I heard Mayo's comments as well, too. I think everything's pointing to Brissett in New England. Raiders starting quarterback is interesting. It's either Aiden O'Connell, who quarterbacked them last year, who they thought was their quarterback of the future, or they brought in Gardner Minshew straight out of a really surprised good season with the Colts that led them to that final game of the regular season against the Texans.
I think it's going to be Gardner Minshew. I mean, Antonio Pierce, I mean, he kind of rode a wave over the second half where they caught fire a little bit and played pretty well and it seemed to win the team over, and they kind of basically forced management into, like, this is our guy. If you don't hire Antonio Pierce, we are going to revolt. So I think Antonio Pierce is going to want to win right now. They've got a great defense led by Max Crosby. Obviously, Davante Adams at wide receiver. So they've got some talent there for him to throw to as well. Drafted Brock Bowers with their first-round pick. So plenty of talent there to where they – look,
they had Michael Mayer. That didn't work out so well.
Well, I mean, he was a rookie tight end. Rookie tight ends don't often produce right away. Obviously, they can't win the division, so we know that. I mean, that's going to be Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. But I think the Raiders view themselves as a team that can win 9 games and sneak into the playoffs, and they can't do that with Aiden O'Connell. So I think Gardner Minshew is going to be the quarterback.
I'll go Minshew. Did you see what they did, by the way, today that's pissed off the Chiefs already?
No, I didn't.
They brought out a Kermit the Frog hand puppet, and they put long, curly hair on it and a red headband.
Sure.
Mahomes got word of it, and he's like, not focused on it now, but there's going to be plenty of time to focus on it. They're going to get at least one ass whooping from the Chiefs.
They were going to get one ass whooping from the Chiefs regardless, but I'm sure the touchdown celebration will involve Kermit in some way now for Patrick Mahomes.
Quite possibly. Steelers starting quarterback is interesting. You and I were talking about it during the break. Russell Wilson misses the last 2 days of practice because during conditioning tests, he had to push a blocking sled, and he calf muscle.
So dumb. What are we doing, Steelers?
Because when he was out, Justin Fields connected on 2 long touchdown passes, and everybody's talking. Now Tomlin's upset, asking if he's going to have to answer this question every day. Yes, you are, because everybody's watching. Short of injury, there's no way in my mind I can see anybody but Russell Wilson starting the year at the quarterback of the Steelers.
Yeah, no, it's same. I mean, Mike Tomlin is a guy who's never had a losing record. He's a tough, hard-nosed head coach. I can't see him wanting to turn over the reins to Justin Fields day one. I could see if they are playing poorly halfway through the season, trying to get a look at Fields, see if he could possibly be their guy of the future, although, spoiler alert, he will not be. But they think they can. I mean, they won 10 games last year. They made the playoffs. They have plans that they're going to be able to do that again. And they did so last year with a quarterback far worse than Russell Wilson. So Russell Wilson's going to be the quarterback week one and for the entire season unless they fall out of it.
Russell Wilson, of course. At a certain point, Russ could get hurt, and that's where you see Fields get his first opportunity. And the Vikings one's interesting, too. Now, you got the highly touted draft pick in J.J. McCarthy out of Michigan, or you got the veteran looking for yet another chance, Sam Darnold, with O'Connell and the guys at Minnesota. It's going to be a little bit more of a competition, I think, than the other ones we mentioned.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Sam Darnold to start, because when you look, and I'm pulling it up right now, when you look at Minnesota's opening stretch of schedule, it is frightening, and they don't even have it on here. Okay, but when you look at their opening stretch of schedules, like the first 6 weeks are just absolute
gauntlet of games.
Yeah, there's no way you're going to throw a rookie. I believe San Francisco is involved in that. A few others. I'm going to try to pull it up on another website since the first one I went to for some reason didn't even have it. But yeah, I think this is a situation where they basically throw Darnold in, to the Wolves, let him deal with the tough stretch of schedule to open the season. And then around like week six, week seven, when the schedule lightens up and Sam Darnold's looked awful for a few weeks, and they go ahead and light, okay, here's the schedule. Raiders to start the year, that's a tough defense. Mm-hmm. At the Browns, tough defense. Mm-hmm. At the Eagles, tough defense. At the Giants, okay, a little bit of a break there. Then home against the 49ers, home against the Texans.
Oof.
Five of the first 6 weeks are absolutely, I'm sorry, actually some of those were preseason, but so we have Giants, 49ers, Texans, Packers, Jets before they're bye.
Two more powerhouse teams.
Yeah, so Jets, Texans, 49ers are absolute, you know, defenses that are going to skull crush you. Giants and Packers are both on the road, well, and those would be the lighter touches. So
Justin Jefferson got his money. You got a good offense. They wouldn't have brought in Aaron Jones if they weren't still trying to win football games.
That's
now.
Part of it too. Sure,
you spent money on Grenard, so I think they're focused on winning. And as much as JJ McCarthy, another guy that's going to be your quarterback of the future, I consider this more like the Drake May situation with the Patriots.
Yeah,
McCarthy needs some seasoning. He needs some time to understand the league, get his feet wet, and with a lot of things questioning his throwing. I think that they're going to, and with you now bringing in the schedule to that too, there's going to be a time where J.J. McCarthy is going to quarterback this team this year, but I think that early on they're going to go to Darnold.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the first 5 weeks, your only three home games are 49ers, Texans, Jets, all killer defenses, and the other two games are on the road against the Giants and Packers and places that could be tough places to play weather-wise. There's no way they're throwing in J.J. McCarthy to that. They're going to let Sam Darnold take those hits, take those bullets, and then when he's proven that he's Sam Darnold and still sucks, they'll throw in J.J. McCarthy after the bye week when the schedule lightens up a little bit.
All right, there you go. We got nothing left to do except for the car wreck of the day. We're going to take a break, then wrap it up, put a bow on it, and put the week behind us as we wish you all a very happy weekend. But don't go away. Car wreck comes up next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, 92.5 FM.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Branham out. BMAC in. It's the final segment of the show for the week before Jeremy comes back on a Monday coming off a vacation. That is Framber Valdez's music as he is going to be on the hill tonight as he takes on the Los Angeles Dodgers in the first of three on Apple TV tonight. And then the final two on the shin with TK and Blummer and BMAC, as it's normally my job to do, but I will turn it over to you. What are you expecting to see from one Framber Valdez tonight against the LA Dodgers?
I'm expecting a pretty good line from Framber tonight, and partly because of this note from Chandler Rome. Shohei Ohtani has taken more plate appearances against Framber Valdez than any pitcher in baseball, and in those appearances, Ohtani is 4-for-34 against Framber Valdez with one home run, 6 walks, and 12 strikeouts. So 3 times as many strikeouts as he has hits, and 4-for-34 Ohtani lifetime against Framber Valdez. So if Framber can indeed neutralize Ohtani like these stats seem to indicate, I'm going to say 7 innings, 2 earned runs from Framber Valdez.
Take it. Book it now,
against the Dodgers.
Book that one. I'll take all of that. That means you got a legit chance to win that one.
Hell yeah, baby.
Rafael Stone's on the mound.
Guaranteed W. Guaranteed W, Austin Rodriguez. We're going to put it on the board tonight. Oh,
put it on the board. Yes. Let's hope it comes through for BMAC, because that would be great to start the series with a dub. I think winning this series would be huge for this team right now, especially with the fact that you're still fighting off so many injuries, but also because Sunday's game right now is scheduled to be Bloss, I believe.
Framber tonight, Blanco tomorrow, and then Sunday would either have to be Bloss or Arrigetti.
And neither one of them entices me.
No, neither one. You definitely hope if you win the series, you get it Friday and Saturday.
Take the first two.
Sunday's going to be difficult.
Let's hope for that, because that would be ideal. All right, so before we go any further, we're running out of time. Let's get to the car wreck of the day.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
You prick. Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
Car wreck of the day nominations, Brian McDonald's. We're running short on time. What you got for me today?
I'll give you a couple quick. One from the world of sports, Travis Kelce. Apparently, this was, I think this happened a little while ago, but people are just becoming aware of it. But he had some errant golf shots. They hit one guy in the arm, and apparently hit one lady square in the back of her head to the point that she was bleeding and nearly blacked out. So that was a scary situation. Travis Kelce's got to be better off the tee box. And then I'm going to nominate kind of a two-pack here. One from our guest.
Tupac Shakur?
No, not that one. Although we're finding out now that maybe Puff Daddy had something to do with that. So maybe we can nominate Puff Daddy. But our guest Travis Johnson for making our man Boston Rodriguez hit the dump button early in that conversation. And then a nomination for myself for apparently not hearing Travis Johnson say, hey, don't ask me about individual players. And then I follow that up with a question about an individual player. So,
and Barry Laminek can't escape this week without being a car wreck of the day nominee for the fact that you and I were both adamant that Bill O'Brien never worked with Nick Caserio,
right?
And he was fighting the other side.
Yeah, which we were right on that one.
Yeah.
So what's winning? We got to get out pretty quickly here.
I know. I, the funny thing on that Travis Kelce thing is Barkley. I thought Kelce could play it. He's gotten very good at golf.
He might be, but he wasn't that day.
Barkley used to tee off on the first hole and tell everybody, I'm going to tell you all right now to move, and therefore I've done my part. If I hit you now, it's your fault, not mine, and there's a good chance I'm going to hit you. I'll say Kelce.
Yeah, I'll go with Kelce. I'll co-sign that.
All right, there you go. The Mr. Taylor Swift wins that one for this week. All right, it's been fun, Brian. Appreciate you and all your time and effort this week filling in for Jeremy. B-Rod, we appreciate you as well doing all the hard work. Hey, look, thanks for joining us. Jeremy's back on Monday. Killer Bees will be intact. Have a great weekend, everybody. Coming up next, we've got
Hall of Fame at 7.
And then we've got Space Cowboys Baseball on 92.5 FM at 7 o'clock as well. Have a great weekend.
ESPN 97.5.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.